Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. This week, we dive into the drama and power plays of Drive to Survive Season 7 as we break down two of the most explosive episodes, Business as Usual and Frenemies. First, we unpack the seismic shakeups in Business as Usual, from Lewis Hamilton's shocking move to Ferrari to the controversy surrounding Christian Horner as the Red Bull paddock is thrown into chaos. How does Netflix frame these off-track bombshells, and what's the real story behind the headlines? Then we'll shift gears to Frenemies. Lando Norris versus Max Verstappen. Is this the beginning of a new title fight, or is Netflix overhyping their tension? We analyze the battles, the drama, and how their dynamic has evolved from gaming buddies to championship contenders. This episode is all about power, politics, and personal rivalries. And as always, we're here to separate Netflix's storytelling from F1 reality.
The first episode of Drive to Survive is called Business as Usual, and it has three sections to it. The first is the reaction of Lewis Hamilton leaving Mercedes for Ferrari. The second is Christian Horner's scandal when his employee accused him of inappropriate behavior and the subsequent investigation. The third is the story of Carlos Sainz having to navigate the landscape of Formula One, knowing that he does not have a Ferrari seat for 2025 and has to find a new team. This episode gives us too much and not enough. All of these storylines should not have been in the same episode because none of them were handled with sufficient detail, depth, and insider perspective. There are other episodes that focus on Mercedes, Red Bull, and Carlos Sainz separately. So one of the storylines from the first episode could have been relegated to a more targeted episode focusing on one particular storyline. There definitely should have been more time and effort spent unpacking the seismic move of Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari, since I do not think Drive to Survive will address it in a more meaningful way in the future episodes. Except for some snark and playing to the cameras by Toto, very brisk remarks by Fred Vasseur, and some very predictable but funny interactions and reaction from drivers and team principals, we do not get enough insight. I'm not sure what level of participation Lewis had this season. Did he have very limited engagement with Netflix and there were no insights that they could impart to us? Or did he not choose to participate at all? I understand that the participation of drivers is voluntary. However, I think the most interesting insight that Netflix provides is during the launch photo shoot, which, by the way, was my favorite part of the episode. And when they show Lewis Hamilton interrupting Fernando Alonso and Charles Leclerc, and as an aside, I'm dying to know what those two talked about. He shakes hands with both, and then Fernando tells him well done with like a very gleeful and mischievous smile. And then you see Carlos Sainz apparently giving a side eye to the entire conversation. So that was very juicy. I'm sure maybe manufactured by Netflix, because I'm not sure Carlos Sainz necessarily looked at those particular individuals at that particular time.
Regarding Lewis's move, I would venture to guess that part of his limited interaction with Netflix had to do with the fact of how it was leaked before the season.
Fred Vasseur says that was done on purpose because they wanted to get it out of the way. This could be just to justify the fact that it was leaked that early. We always have to take what principals say with a grain of salt. But according to the way that Drive to Survive presents it, it is definitely intentional. They don't go into how Toto find out, which was very juicy. It's a supposition where he heard it. People think it was Carlos Sainz Sr., Carlos's father, who leaked it to him that this was happening. He reached out to Fred Vasseur, and what Fred Vasseur did not respond to his text. He knew it was true.
That was the WhatsApp reference. I forgot how all of that unfolded because it came out so fast. But I love the Fred Vasseur wink.
I am surprised that Drive to Survive brought up Christian Horner's scandal in the first episode. I think what they showed was just skimming the surface to get out of the way. They did not provide any insight that we did not know. Netflix may have been trying to stick with chronology, and since the developments following the independent investigation into the scandal happened around Bahrain. That's where they thought it would fit best. I thought it was shoehorned in, glossed over, and I believe we'll confirm once we get to the Red Bull episode, we will never hear it mentioned again. There was so much more to the story than the scandal itself, which I think deserves a lot more attention than it received, because there was also a power struggle that was fueled by the scandal. And we have Helmut Marko and our least favorite father on the grid, Jos Verstappen on one side and Christian Horner on the other. And this power struggle did not happen during a race weekend and went on and on and on. I doubt it'll be mentioned again, because in our second episode, we actually have an interaction between Jos Verstappen and Christian Horner that seems super friendly and very diplomatic, whereas in the first episode, it actually shows Jos Verstappen questioning whether Christian Horner should remain a team principal of Red Bull.
There was so much that happened in the start of the season, and it's really difficult to pack it all into 10 episodes. We are just reviewing the first two, and it really calls into question Netflix's storytelling. I do agree they should have handled the Horner scandal better than they did. I hate how Jerry, Christian's wife, was dragged into the middle of it. She's a Spice Girl. Her all-girl group that supports empowering women and standing behind them, and then to get dragged into the middle of a scandal like this about your husband and then have to go out and show face and show, you know, support. I have never seen such a forced smile, even live in 24 and on the show.
Well, it's interesting because even Max's famous sign-off, which we'll get to when we get to talk about the second episode, Simply Lovely, is a Spice Girl reference. So that's, I think, one of the reasons she's so prevalent in Netflix episodes. But what's interesting is going through this scandal, or following the scandal live, there was so much speculation. Will Jerry show up in Bahrain? And when she did look like Drive to Survive depicted her, deer in headlights, like a hostage being dragged across the grid in front of the cameras. It was extremely uncomfortable. I'm sure it was not a picnic for her. I'm sure Drive to Survive will not show any of that. There were races where she did not show up, which is fine because I don't think she shows up at every race. But the speculation went through the roof every time she didn't appear on the grid, as like, what is happening? Is she so disgusted by his actions? Because as William Buxton, surprisingly, but very aptly put, even though like Red Bull took this posture that this investigation is independent and it cleared Christian and he did nothing wrong, they never said all the texts and photos they came out after the second practice at Bahrain that they were not real.
Right. I would guess the way that it was taken care of, that it was a private settlement to get it to go away.
I don't think it settled yet, because there's still litigation about it. This is a turning point for Drive to Survive really embracing Christian as a villain. I don't think he was a hero per se, but I thought they always had a more measured take on him. And I think this is the beginning of him being shown as more villainous than we've seen him before. And him insisting that he's experiencing this turmoil because he's winning and people are jealous, and the more you win, the sharper the knives. None of that is a good look. And the crux of the case is really his behavior, for which he's not taken any responsibility or accountability. The hero of the episode is definitely poor, beleaguered Carlos Sainz. And I'm sure he was traumatized when he heard what happened and that he was the victim of losing his seat in Ferrari because they needed to make space for Lewis Hamilton. I think, again, Drive to Survive upped the drama because they have Claire Williams very dramatically stating, he is the only non-Red Bull driver who won a race in 2023. How can you let him go? And she's right. He is. However, as usual with Carlos Sainz, just when I start to feel a lot of sympathy for him, he says something that takes me a little by surprise. And this time it was him saying that he saw himself winning Drivers' Championship with Ferrari. And I agree, he should probably think that way. But there are a few people standing in his way, including his teammate. I did not like when, during the Australian Grand Prix, they kept showing radio messages telling Sainz that he was faster than Leclerc. At that race, Leclerc had a brake issue which was a car issue. And that is one of the reasons he was slower, because the whole point was that Sainz was super talented, could attain wins, and yet he doesn't have a seat for next year.
Well, that was the storyline, and I do have sympathy for Sainz. You have two very talented drivers at Ferrari, and the narrative that Sainz tries to go with, which I disagree, is that he's the better driver than Leclerc. Shame on Ferrari letting him go. They never were going to let Leclerc go. They have always invested in Leclerc. He's an excellent driver. Sainz is a good driver, and it is an unfortunate thing for him to lose his seat, especially because it's not the first time he's been bumped. I understand his roller coaster of a driver's arc and his path. And yes, his best chance to be able to become a champion at Ferrari compared to the other teams. I was surprised that Red Bull and Mercedes really didn't look at him. Even Horner said, like, this is the guy who's winning races. He won. And he doesn't have a seat.
We're not sure if that's going to be the narrative going forward, because I have a feeling there is a Carlos Sainz-centric episode, and maybe we'll hear more insight from Mercedes and or Red Bull for why he was not considered, or if he was considered, what stopped them. But it also kind of, and I'm sure it gave him a complex that, like, these other top teams don't want me.
I would love to hear the behind the scenes. I think that would be fascinating to get that insight. And even the exchange he had with Lewis, he's like, well, I haven't heard from Toto yet. So I guess he's not considering me.
The whole conversation about Lewis and science, which I think is probably the most insightful piece of information that we got from Drive to Survive. If Toto was interested, he would have already called. And he keeps asking if Lewis thinks that Mercedes are done or not going to be as competitive. And Lewis's response, I don't think so. I wish there was a follow-up, because if I was Carlos, it's like, well, then why are you leaving if you think they're still going to be a contender? I also want to say your favorite driver, Valtteri Bottas, had also a cute reaction saying that he's waiting for Toto to call, but so far his phone has not rang.
I know. My favorite Australian Finnish driver. Those are the main themes of the episodes. How about Netflix versus reality? There are quite a few themes they are trying to position in a certain way that are not quite what actually happened last season. And they missed quite a few things that actually happened that I think they should have included, such as when Carlos had his appendix taken out, who replaced him, and how well that driver did.
There is a Carlos Sainz episode, but I doubt we will see this explored there as well, because I feel that if they showed his appendicitis and him missing a race and winning in Australia, if they go back and do this again, this would be a little too repetitive for Netflix. So I doubt they will go there, but they missed a huge opportunity, because Oliver Bearman, who replaced Carlos Sainz for the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix, is adorable. And he did such a great job bringing really good points and impressing everyone so much by his performance that ensured him being on the grid for 2025 in a Haas. But at the time, Ollie was in Formula 2 and he did not do that great. Could be because he had to race in Formula 1. But that, first of all, shows that the rookies that are coming in 2025 are super talented. Ollie wasn't even one of the favorites for the F2 title, and he did amazingly well and ended up on the grid. So I thought it could have been a great aspect to include in this episode, because that would have also served as Carlos Sainz's motivation for getting back as soon as possible, because it is insane that it took him so little time to get back in Formula One car when he said, like, it still hurts to laugh, it still hurts to cough. And he was obviously motivated because he needed to show that he's good enough to get a good seat for the next season. But also, if there is a replacement who's much younger and is doing so well, then he needs to return as soon as possible.
Well, for Ollie, when we watched that race live, I believe, if I recall correctly, he placed P7.
He did.
First drive, first race in an F1 car, P7. Lewis Hamilton waited for him to get out of the car to congratulate him. It was such a great moment. And Netflix totally missed all of it.
I wish Netflix would get into more of is that the drivers are all different height. Carlos Sainz is quite a bit shorter than Oliver Bearman, who is one of the tallest drivers on the grid. So I remember Ollie doing an interview after the race saying he could barely like unfurl himself after getting into the car because he had to be so scrunched in and it was so uncomfortable. So with that in mind, seeing it's his first F1 race with very little to no preparation, this result is very impressive.
Let's play a little game. We've seen the episode. We watched this season live. What if? What would be your what if scenario? Mine would be, what if Ollie Bearman was given another race or Carlos Sainz took time? How do you think that would have impacted the season?
I actually don't think it would have impacted Carlos Sainz in any way, because he signed with Williams. He had other teams courting him. And I honestly think Williams would still want him in the seat. He may have not taken as much time to sign as he did, because if he had to wait longer to come back, he wouldn't be as high up in the Drivers' Championship. He would not have shown as much of good form as he ultimately did in this season. And that would have affected it. His perception of how likely it would be for a more successful team to want him, which I think is the reason why he held out for so long.
Well, on the flip side of that, what if Ollie Bearman had a couple more races in his Ferrari seat and performed really well? Do you think that could have impacted, say, like the Red Bull second seat?
I don't think so, because Ollie is from the Ferrari Driver Academy. I think in his mind, as probably in all drivers' mind, he wants a Ferrari seat. So for him to go to Red Bull, Ferrari would have to release him from any affiliation. And I think that might have been a bridge a little bit too far. I think Red Bull, they're so weird. I'm not sure what they would have done. But again, if you go into that family, you see how they treat young drivers. It is not a welcoming environment. I do think on the flip side, he could have had really unfortunate results, because remember, Ferrari tends to do Ferrari things. And again, the car was not designed for him. So who knows what struggles he would have developed. So it's very possible that he would not have been as successful in his second or third races. So I almost think it benefited him that he only got one chance in the Ferrari car and it was so successful, because there was no follow-up.
Let's move into episode 2 of Frenemies, which ends up highlighting the battle between Lando Norris and Max Verstappen. If you recall, in 2023, McLaren was very slow. They had a mid-season major upgrade that really catapulted that car to the front of the grid to become a challenger for Red Bull in 2024. As we set the stage for 2024 in McLaren, they have an excellent car. The pressure is on Lando Norris more so than Oscar Piastri to perform. And McLaren's take of having no number one driver really plays out throughout this season. Let's get into what really happened between Lando and Max once Lando was able to start challenging Red Bull.
One thing that kind of bridges the gap between the first episode and the second episode is when Will Buxton says there are no friendship in Formula One. If you remember from the very first season of Drive to Survive, Pierre Gasly had this very optimistic that he couldn't see why there would be an issue of being friends in Formula One. This is ironic because Pierre Gasly, who famously has this insane rivalry with Esteban Ocon when they were childhood friends, and the only reason that friendship fell apart that we know is that on-track battle really did a number on them and they couldn't separate the personal from what was happening on the track. In the first episode, Toto alludes to his friendship with Fred Vasseur as being tested by the fact that Lewis went to Ferrari and Fred didn't give Toto a heads up, which I do think is a little bit hypocritical, because if the shoe was on the other foot, Toto would have done exactly the same thing. But in terms of Max versus Lando, they are friends in real life, starting from their karting days. And I don't know about you, Aaron, but that picture of Max and Lando shaking hands and the height disparity between the two is just the funniest visual you could ever imagine.
Lando has always been one of the smaller drivers. It has been interesting watching him mature over the Drive to Survive seasons. He started off the season as a boy, and then all of a sudden, by the end of it, you're like, Lando grew up. He looks a bit more like a man.
Exactly. Right. So, yeah. So, the one thing that I think Netflix depicts kind of disingenuously is they paint Max as clearly a villain. They, of course, show him shoving Ocon in the famous incident in Brazil. I want to say, but we definitely saw it in the first season of Drive to Survive. So, by this time, it's been 6 years and we're using the same clip, but that's how they show Max. And then Lando's shown as literally being on the side of the angels because they show him playing with puppies. And that is so manipulated and manufactured. I do think their friendship was helped by the fact that until 2024, Lando was not in that competitive a car. He wasn't threatening Max. So it was easy for Max off the track to be very friendly with Lando because what does he have to lose? He's in a dominant position. Lando's not a threat. And for Lando, I think he took a lot of Max's friendship as extending way beyond, off the track relationship. Because in 2024, they would still come to races together on Max's private jet. And that was true in Bahrain. I believe that was true in Jeddah. So in all these races where Max was winning and Lando was not really that close, the relationship continued on its path. Things began to change in Miami when Lando won. Even though Netflix did not show it, Max was super happy. He was laughing. He was congratulating Lando. In post-race press conferences, he kept saying that Lando deserved the win, refused any conversation that any luck was involved, because in his words, luck is involved in all the races. So he was so complimentary. In Lando's mind, oh my God, this is my friend. He's supportive on the track. After Miami, as Lando kept getting closer and closer and they started to battle on the track, for Lando, I think it was surprising to see how aggressive Max was with him. Because remember, this is the guy who was happy that he won. And here he is, not letting him through, doing completely, in my mind and in Lando's mind, illegal things, trying to keep Lando behind.
Max is known to be extremely aggressive, and it was frustrating to see exactly how sharp the elbows were with Lando. For Max, it's got to be difficult because literally he won every single race in 2023 except for one. Everybody knows dynasties come to an end, but it was frustrating to see how Netflix really made it into a bit more of something, except the Austrian Grand Prix, which we'll get into because those were very real reactions from each of them on how their expectations of what they wanted to see their resolution of.
Exactly. And actually, I think we should get into the Austrian Grand Prix. The constant battles between Max and Lando as Lando tried to pass Max, and Max was doing everything under the sun that I would consider should not have been allowed to not let Lando pass. And all those radios that were played in Drive to Survive were accurate, that Lando kept complaining. You could hear his frustration. Like, he's not letting me pass. What he's doing is dangerous. It's going to lead to a shunt. And he was right. Eventually, they did collide. And the words of Lando ruined his race and Max's race, which, by the way, I do not agree with, because I think that shows Lando's naivete, because his team was telling him to keep driving. And granted, his car was not in a great state, but maybe he could have pushed it through because there were only a few laps left. And he refused, went to the pits, and did not finish, even though he was still classified, because there are a certain number of laps. If you complete, you're technically considered to finish the race. Whereas Max continued and finished fifth, and his whole point was to stay ahead of Lando. So he got points, Lando didn't. It didn't really ruin Max's race as much as Lando thought, because yes, he didn't win, but he stayed ahead of Lando. And at that point in the season, I think Max's whole reason for continuing in Formula One is to finish as the world champion in 2024, no matter how he got there, which was very evident by his actions in Austria. Another thing I want to add is that what I really wish they would show is that he did get a penalty. Not enough. He did get 2 penalty points on his license. And one thing I don't think Netflix is going to bring up, which I think is insane, is the whole penalty system. And the fact that we actually had a driver who amassed 12 penalty points, which meant he was banned for the next race. And spoiler alert, that's how Ollie Bearman got into Haas car. But for Max, those 2 points were important because he now has 8 points on his license. So he gets just 4 more, which should not be that difficult considering his aggressiveness. That's it. He misses a race.
Which I don't think he's going to be sad about because he's going to time it around to the birth of his baby. He's on paternity leave.
He will not like it if he's not number one at that point in the world championship race because that could affect his chances.
Oh, definitely. Well, I would venture to guess this is the difference between the two. And this was the thread that you heard most from commentators. Lando was not in the right mental state of being a world champion and knowing what it means to have that mentality to fight to really be a champion. I think he was surprised he could challenge Max and got in his own way quite a bit. My what if scenario for this one, Lando had 8 poles in 2024, but he was only able to convert 2 of those to race wins. If he was in a mental state like Max, those would be converted to wins, and he would have given Max more of a run for his money for the world championship.
Absolutely. Although I have to say, there's going to be a McLaren episode, and some of those poles were not next to Max, but we'll tackle those as they come up. I agree that his mentality obviously was not at the level they have to be when you're racing Max Verstappen. I think it was clouded by the fact that they had this friendship. The aftermath of Austria that they show was all based on post-match conferences that were available to the public before Drive to Survive. So we did see the most awkward post-race interview when they were interviewed next to each other and were basically talking about how the other is the reason that they didn't finish where they wanted in the race. And Lando was hurt. I do believe he did not take Max's private jet after the race. And I believe they didn't talk for quite a bit afterward. And as Lando says in Drive to Survive interview, he expected Max to call him on Monday and just to chit-chat and maybe apologize. And that didn't happen.
Max would not do that. I truly believe he is able to separate what happens on the racetrack as business. What happens off the track is personal. And that was business. No harm, no foul. And Lando didn't view it that way.
I agree. The episode ends on Lando winning Dutch Grand Prix, which is a huge win. As they mentioned, both Miami Grand Prix and Dutch Grand Prix were only won by Max Verstappen. So he managed to beat him in 2 races. Lando ends Dutch Grand Prix with Simply Lovely, which everyone took to mean is a message or a dig at Verstappen, and I agree with that, and that's very juicy, and that really happened. So that was good for Netflix. But towards the end of the season, he and Max had a good relationship. I don't think it probably was as good as it used to be before all these on-track incidents interfered, but I think they were in very friendly afterwards, and that's, of course, does not fit Netflix storyline, so it was left out.
They really brought out Lando's party boy reputation, especially with the injury to his nose. But our favorite party boy had to bring out his inner bastard to really toughen his mental state from not being expected to challenge Max to challenging Max and then being able to separate race track behavior to off track friendships.
If we can go back to Miami, I want to bring up one inconsistency or one of the things that Netflix didn't show that really happened, and that is the safety car incident. Now, the reason why everybody said it was luck, because it was not the usual safety car deployment after a crash or an incident. In Miami, there was an error with the safety car because the safety car picked up Max and not Lando, which gave Lando extra time to switch out his tires and still end up in first position on the track, which is a huge advantage. So it was completely not Lando's fault that that happened. It was funny because during watching it during the race, the chatter was that the safety car just assumed, well, if Max is on the track, he's the one leading, and forgot that Max was actually in second position at that time, which I thought was funny because I think FIA officially said it was deployed too late, which doesn't make any sense, but that's FIA for you. But I thought that's what made this safety car different from every other safety car incidents. And of course, the hypocrisy of Christian Horner saying, oh, McLaren just got lucky, Lando just got lucky, was just insane.
I never want to hear Christian Horner complain about a safety car ever again, whether it's unfair to Max or not. I was quite gleeful that Lando benefited so well from that safety car.
Even though McLaren brought upgrades to Miami, which again is not mentioned on Drive to Survive, I, at the time watching this, I actually thought it was because of the safety car and that Lando will never get anywhere closer. So watching Imola and seeing how closer he kept getting to Max and the difference was only like 8 tenths of a second seemed so amazing. But I honestly thought that's as close as he's gonna get. For me, when he won Dutch Grand Prix, it was pretty satisfying.
Oh, I thought that was simply lovely, him winning the Dutch Grand Prix.
My superlatives for both episodes was two things that I thought were not on-track actions that are just very cute, special. One was the best interaction, and that was during my favorite part of both episodes, which is the launch photo shoot. And that's when Valtteri Bottas, sporting a new mullet hairstyle, was shown joking with Daniel Ricciardo. That some would say that he looks like an Australian construction worker. And Daniel replied that he looks like all of his friends. It is so sad that those two are no longer on the grid because that exchange was wholesome, adorable, and just filled you with good vibe. The other was what I consider the best fan exchange, and that was the fan interaction between a child and Toto Wolff. And it was pure gold because the child fan asked Toto what he does at Mercedes, and Toto, without missing a beat, says marketing. And this goes back all the way to the first episode when Daniel Ricciardo called himself a car mechanic.
I know, I really like the Toto marketing comment, although I am in marketing, so I didn't quite know if that was a jab at marketing or not, but I'm going to take it as a compliment that we work in the same department.
I think it's a compliment just for you, Erin.
My superlative is most exciting move, and it will come as no surprise that it was Lewis moving to Ferrari after a difficult couple of years at Mercedes. And for him to switch to Ferrari, for that to reinvigorate his own personal excitement, the mark on the sport, having Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari, having him paired with Charles Leclerc. So seeing him interact at the photo shoot, which did kind of look like a Teletubby set, everyone was excited for him. It's a big deal. They showed it a couple times, but the Fred Vasseur wink, because every time Toto said, really, he's leaving, I didn't see that coming from Fred. And then you get the Fred wink, just gets me every time.
It was great, except I do feel Toto was really playing up the surprise. I'm sure he was shocked when it happened, but I just felt it was a very camera-friendly moment.
I'm sure the initial raw reaction is not. I saw an article when the announcement came out last year when Toto found out his initial thought was straight in team principal mode of how do we contain this? What's the PR move? Who do we fill the seat? It's all the check, 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 the business boxes. And then he said, he goes, I had to take a step back and realize this is my driver. This is my friend. This is not personal, and switch mode and actually divide the principal to friend. And I can imagine that's tough. And it's hard probably not to take that personally, but they really seemed to handle their very long divorce of the season really well. I think best team move by far is my favorite superlative out of the two of these. This superlative actually goes for Esty Bestie. We will call it the best pet of the paddock moment when Esteban Ocon is holding his cat, saying, this is cats to survive. We've gone through the first two episodes, lots to unpack. Really looking forward to seeing what is to come. We'll touch quickly on current silly season rumors because as this episode is being released, it's finally here. It is the first race of the season.
Well, since it's Australia, the time difference is going to be insane. So I will be watching it recorded. but I'll try to watch it live as in not to jump ahead. But I do have this tendency. Max Verstappen did come out and supposedly put down Red Bull's chances of being in the front. I'm not sure I believe him. I think the conventional wisdom is that McLaren are super strong, in which case it could be interesting because it is Oscar Piastri's home race.
I will also say, I think now that we actually have a podcast, you're not going to be able to skip ahead. You're going to need to watch it all the way through chronologically.
That is a good point.
We'll see more coming up this week as we actually have practice and qualifying and
And
a
a
race.
race.
And a race.
So that's a wrap on this week's breakdown of Drive to Survive Season 7's Business as Usual and Frenemies episode. These episodes gave us a taste of the high stakes drama, both on and off the track. Next week, we are diving into episode 3, where we will separate fact from Netflix magic as we take a peek into the musical chairs for the now vacant Mercedes seat and review the action from the Australian Grand Prix, the first race of the 2025 season. We'll break down who stole and who broke our hearts, the midfield madness, the surprise performances, and the team struggles that Netflix will surely spotlight next season.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, and movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite 2024 memory. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel the podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.